It is 2 weeks until the Ohio primary, and one of the hotly watched contests around the country is the Ohio Senate race. And so 21 News, being your place for politics, is delving into the issues with all of the major candidates for the GOP nomination for senator who would go on to take on Sherrod Brown in November. So with us today is current Secretary of State and would-be future senator, Frank LaRose. Frank, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thank you so much for the chance to.
So we'll jump right in. First thing I want to do is just talk about the tenor and the tone of the race. Much like the last Senate race, this has been one where the shadow of the former president has loomed large, especially with him likely to be on the ballot again in November. Now, you certainly had courted Donald Trump's endorsement. That ultimately went to Bernie Moreno. And as the presidential primary has played out, we are seeing a little bit of a quiet phenomenon happening where you definitely have Trump winning decisively over Nikki Haley in almost every race. But you also have Nikki Haley pulling in the neighborhood of, you know, around 20% in a lot of these places. And Ohio does appear to be poised to follow that pattern should she stay in. Now, while nowhere near competitive, that is a statistically significant number of Republicans who realize Haley has no realistic chance of getting the nomination and are casting votes for her anyways. So I guess my question is, while these races are often defined by who's courting Trump voters, my question is the inverse of that, which is, what is your message to those Ohio Republicans who are not necessarily in that camp? Are you interested in unifying with them? And are there any distinct differences between you and Donald Trump that you can point to on policy?
Well, that's a great question. And listen, I'm my own man. I'm a conservative Ohio Republican that believes that we have a country to save. That agenda that I have aligns very well with President Trump. That's why I've endorsed him. And that's why I support him. And that's why, by the way, I would be a great ally of his in the U.S. Senate. But what we need to do is unite the conservative movement and take on our true opponents, which is people like Sherrod Brown that want to take our country in a dangerous direction. So regardless of who your favorite candidate for president is, I want to earn your vote because I'm the guy that can beat Sherrod Brown in November. And that's what really is the objective here. You need a battle-tested, proven candidate that can take on and defeat a long-term incumbent like Brown. I'm the only one that's ever won a statewide election in this race and have performed very well in areas where Republicans need to perform well, like our urban areas, among our minority communities, among suburban voters, among union households, where I've done enormously well over the years. But we also need to replace Sherrod Brown with somebody who shares our values. And that's really what's the most important part of this. I'm the proven conservative in this race. Both of my opponents, Mr. Dolan and Mr. Moreno, have a very liberal record. And of course, you know, they've got this kind of shifty move where they're trying to convince people that they're conservatives now. Ohioans aren't buying it, especially with Moreno, who has a long history of supporting amnesty, for example, where he wrote an op-ed calling for a path to citizenship. Moreno, who had a long history of supporting anti-gun initiatives, like when he funded an effort by this Bloomberg anti-gun group, or just recently when he recorded a video mocking gun owners and talking about taking away people's firearms. Ohioans know that's not a genuine conservative. They don't trust him. And they do know who they can trust in this race to run into battle and fight for their values. That's me. And that's why I'm the one that's going to be able to unite the party and go defeat Sherrod Brown.
Now, you are polling right now, and there's not a ton of polls out there on this race, but you are polling behind both Moreno and Dolan in at least the most recent major polls that I've seen. Now, one might imagine that Moreno there's a bump reflected because of the Trump endorsement, I would imagine. But you did make yourself the public face of the effort last August to raise the threshold for constitutional amendments to 60%, as well as a subsequent effort in November to limit reproductive rights. Now, statewide, those voters turned out in droves to repudiate both of those efforts. Do you think you did yourself irreparable damage by aligning yourself so closely with these causes when those were statewide races where voters spoke very loudly?
Well, first of all, on polls, they're a snapshot, a glimpse. Some are accurate, some are inaccurate. I think you should call into question the polls that come from my opponent's camps. In many cases, those are meant to be a public relations effort by them. The polling I've seen shows a very competitive race. Some polls I've seen show me up by a point or two. Some show me down by a point or two. I've not seen a single poll that shows anything other than a competitive race between myself and Mr. Moreno in particular. Now, you asked about the issues last summer. Ohioans know that I'm a guy that runs into battle, not just when it's easy, but when it's right. And maybe that's my background as an Army Green Beret. I'm somebody that takes on the tough challenges because it's the right thing to do. That was what I did last year when I fought to protect our state constitution against out-of-state special interests. And I have consistently fought to protect the sanctity of life in Ohio. That's why I'm the only candidate in this race with a 100% pro-life voting record. And I'm proud to be endorsed by Ohio Right to Life. Again, I fight for what's right, regardless if it's easy. But let me tell you what I saw last summer. And thank God this has never happened to me as a member of the military. As an Army Green Beret, when I've been on the battlefield, I've been able to look to my left or right and see my teammates there fighting shoulder to shoulder with me. Last summer, in many cases, I felt that I was fighting this fight alone or without the help of certain other Republicans, in particular, both of my opponents, that sort of melted away when they realized this was going to be a difficult fight. I think that's what they would do in the Senate as well. They would back down from the fight. I never would.
Now, one of the issues you highlight on your website, because I do want to get into issues, and that was the state of the race, but let's get into some issues now. You cite one of your key issues as conscience objections for religious organizations, saying they shouldn't have to take part in things that they object to. And you specifically cite things like same-sex marriage. I want to know how far you would take this exemption from discrimination laws. For instance, you know, as I'm sure you know, I mean, historically, there were evangelical churches at the time of the civil rights movement that cited religious beliefs as a defense for segregation. Where do religious groups right to choose discrimination on the basis of faith versus their right to religious freedom? Where do you draw that line?
Okay, well, I'm not going back 60 or 70 years. What I am talking about is here in 2024. And I believe that we have a well-established principle in this country that religious organizations, schools, churches, houses of worship should never have to do things that are contrary to their religious beliefs. And that's been very clear. And I have stood up consistently to protect that freedom of religion and the free expression of religion includes, by the way, no heavy-handed government regulations that would require a church to do something that they consider inconsistent with their beliefs. That shouldn't be controversial whatsoever.
But that is a blanket exemption then.
Yes. Yeah, okay. No church, no mosque, no synagogue. No house of worship should be forced to do something inconsistent with their belief set. This is an American principle. Sure. This is not a conservative idea.
Now, another issue that comes up a lot in this race and in others is now approximately 1.03% of Americans identify as transgender. Of those, more than 40% of these people have attempted suicide, largely due to being marginalized. Now, you cite support for the transgender community is a key issue that you're opposed to, saying that activists are doing damage to children. Isn't singling this statistically tiny portion of the population out as a problem also likely to cause children harm?
No. You know what causes children harm is when adults bring their ideology into this conversation and would dare to manipulate a child to making a permanent change to their body. That's child abuse. If you're a grown-up and you want to go see a surgeon, you're free to do that. I don't understand it, but that's your freedom to do it. Leave the kids alone. Kids are not allowed to get a tattoo or even something like a piercing without a parental approval. And certainly an irrevocable change to someone's body absolutely should not be allowed for children. Now, of course, I'm not lacking in compassion for a young person that's dealing with a mental health issue. They should be able to get the counseling that they need and the love and support of not only their family, but their community. But again, making a permanent surgical or chemical change to a child is absolutely not something any civilized society should ever be willing to even consider.
Okay. Now, I want to be respectful of your time, and I do know that we're coming up on 15 minutes here pretty quickly. So I do want to get into healthcare also as another issue that you cite on your website. I don't know that it expressly says this, but I would assume that you're opposed to the Affordable Care Act. I know that you cite problems with it, certainly. I'd like to know.
Not only am I opposed to it, but I have a voting record to prove it, including voting to override a governor's veto on this. The Affordable Care Act is something that I have opposed all along.
Now, the Commonwealth Fund nonprofit puts the United States as in some categories dead last, spending the most on healthcare with the worst outcomes. So it is, I don't think, a controversial statement that healthcare in the United States could stand to be improved. What would your plan be for improving healthcare in the United States? What would be a bill that you would vote for? Keeping in mind that a lot of the nations that are that have better outcomes do have some form of universal access to healthcare, which varies nation to nation.
Yeah, so what you're talking about, government-run socialized healthcare, something that
in some cases, certainly,
vehemently opposed to. So again, the Affordable Care Act is a classic sort of big government solution to a problem that didn't really address the underlying symptom here. The underlying disease is the cost of healthcare, which is out of control. What it attempted to do is just sort of ignore the cost of healthcare and focus on coverage and subsidizing coverage for healthcare. What we need to do is address this more holistically. We need to see more competition and more transparency. Try to figure out exactly what it is you're paying for when you get a hospital bill. And it's like trying to read hieroglyphics. It's not something that sort of allows for there to be that free market consumer choice that really drives innovation and competition and keeps prices low in so many other facets of society. So yeah, we need more competition. We need more transparency in this. Of course, there need to be things in place for people with pre-existing condition and sort of the most chronic and difficult situations. That's a small number of people. But what we need to do is be the leader in the world in innovation, as America is, and also make sure that everyone has access to low-cost, affordable, and high-quality healthcare. We can do that if we're actually willing to take a thoughtful approach to it instead of kind of this big government solution of Obamacare, which in many ways is really, I believe, just a sort of a Trojan horse to try to lead us down the road to fully government-run healthcare, which I don't think any of us should want. I don't think you want to put the same people that are in charge of many other federal bureaucracies in charge of our healthcare.
Is there any other main issue that's like your top priority? If you're elected, this is the first bill you want to write. What would it be?
Yeah, so it's the economy, and what that means is I want to make the Trump tax cuts permanent. The 2025 tax cuts are set to expire. A multi-billion-dollar tax cut expiring is called a tax increase that would disproportionately impact working families and small businesses. I also want to do regulatory reform. What this means is reeling in all of the out of control bureaucrats that are really stifling growth in our economy, including and perhaps most perniciously in the energy sector. We need to drill for oil. We need to drill for gas. We need to mine for coal. Unlike my opponents who support green energy and government subsidies for green energy, I want power that works when the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining. Those are things that I've focused on. Border security is another one. I've served on the U.S.-Mexican border. I've laid out the most aggressive plan of any candidate for how we're going to address that. And that means finishing the wall. It also means deploying the military down there to stop the invasion. Not an extreme idea. I served in the military on the border 24 years ago. It also means no amnesty, and it means deporting those that are here illegally. And then parents' rights, which we touched on. Lauren and I are raising three school-age children. I'm the only candidate in this race with school-age children. I am not interested in co-parenting with the government. Lauren and I want our children to be raised with our values. I think that's something most Americans want. One other that's become an issue in this campaign is gun rights. And in many ways, it's a proxy for freedom more generally. It's come to light that Mr. Moreno in particular has a very liberal record on guns. He recorded a video where he was talking about taking away people's firearms and talked about restricting how many bullets you can have as though he gets to make that decision. He also sat on a charitable board that gave money to the Bloomberg anti-gun group. This is why I've been backed by Ohio gun owners, especially a group called Buckeye Firearms Association, because I know that the Second Amendment is not just about shooting sports. It's not just about hunting. Those are great things. But it's about this fundamental idea that a disarmed society is not free, but an armed society is. And I will always protect the Second Amendment. You can't trust shifty Bernie Moreno when it comes to that.
You know, to that point, I do. You mentioned parents' rights and then you mentioned gun rights. You pivoted right to that. So where is the line where a parent's view may not be informed or in line with a well-rounded education? And is it then more important that you protect children from those ideas than obviously the very real American problem of school shootings, where you're not willing to put any restrictions on gun rights?
Well, interesting how you tie those two together. I don't think
because it's the First and Second Amendment, and one would be an infringement arguably on one, but the other is sacrosanct.
Well, first of all, I just don't think as a practical matter that you make anyone safer by disarming law-abiding people. Again, my opponents may disagree on that. Moreno and Dolan have both supported so-called red flag laws where they would take guns away from people without due process. I think that that's very dangerous, and I would never support that. But on parents' rights, listen, this is clear. Biden's Secretary of Education, a man in charge of an agency that really shouldn't exist, the U.S. Department of Education, said on national TV, "I don't respect these parents who misbehave at school board meetings because they think they know better than the experts how these children should be educated." What arrogance. Listen here, Mr. Secretary of Education. Nobody knows better than the parents how children should be educated. And we as parents need to stand up and say, these classrooms that are teaching children to hate each other based on race, that has to end. And classrooms that are teaching children to hate this country based on a false, skewed view of American history, that needs to end as well. We need to teach children to love and respect and accept one another. And we need to teach children to love this country, including a full view of our nation's successes and failures. But America's worth loving, and we need to teach our children to do that.
So where is that line? I mean, obviously, if a parent says 2 + 2 = 7, and I'll be damned if anybody says otherwise, well, the parent doesn't know better than the expert. So that's what I'm saying is where is the line? What specific topics should not be taught in classrooms, or is it a matter of how they're taught?
Well, first of all, I believe in local control of education, and that goes to curriculum, reading lists, and everything else. This is why it's so important that we elect school board members. And then you make a choice about whether you want to send your child to a public school or a private school or whether you want to homeschool. I believe in school choice. I think that what we've done in Ohio is a good start. We need to see that in the other 49 states as well. I think that school choice is the civil rights issue of our era in many ways. But again, I'm not in favor of telling parents what their children should be taught or not taught. How far do you take that? Do you tell Amish families that their children have to be educated in things that are contrary to their beliefs? I don't believe that that's correct. And when a mother and a father bring a child into the world, they are accepting what I view as a responsibility from God to raise that child. Parents have to be trusted to raise their children the way that they see fit. Of course, protecting against something like child abuse, that's never allowed. And we would be eager to enforce the law on anybody that abused a child. But when it comes to education and raising your child with your values, give me an example. I spoke at a Muslim community event just a couple of days ago where they were opening a new part of their mosque here in Columbus. This is something that that variety of faith communities share. These men and women believe that their children should be raised with their values. They don't think that their sons should be taught that they can become daughters. They think that they should be able to teach their children that bringing a child into the world is a gift from God or Allah, as they say. They believe in teaching their children their values, and they absolutely should be free to do so in this country.
Frank LaRose, the Ohio primary is 2 weeks from today, and I appreciate your time.
Hey, thank you so much. See you
soon. Thank you. Yep, absolutely. See ya.
Bye.